Hello everyone, Tomasz here, another episode of Fuji Love Podcast, and we have a sponsor today. Today's episode is brought to you in association with Landscape Pro 2. If you shoot outdoors, whether that's landscapes, wildlife, travel, street photography, or even location portraits, you will find lots of great tools for editing your images in Landscape Pro 2. Visit landscapepro.pix to learn more about this software and listen out for a special discount later in the show.
This is Fuji Love, a podcast for Fujifilm X users from around the globe. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome to the Fuji Love podcast. This is episode number 21. In case you're wondering, this is not Tomasz with a really bad cold. My name is Jens, and we actually wanted to start off this kind of handover on the Fuji Love podcast with an interview between Tomasz and myself to give you an outlook on what happened in the Fuji Love universe and what's going to happen in the future. But then the good folks at Fujifilm actually pushed us back, quote-quote, by releasing amazing new updates and models. So we had to switch that plan up a little bit and talk about what's new and exciting. In case you want to hear Tomasz, he's also kicking off today Photography Radio with amazing guests, and you should absolutely go and check that out. So there's no massive changes. We'll release an episode every 2 weeks. We keep an average length of 30 minutes, and we're trying to give you information out of the Fuji Love universe. So to start off today's episode, I would like to introduce our guest today. Most of you know him probably from the Fujifilm world. Besides being an official Fujifilm ambassador and a member of the Cage Collective, he is also a doctor. And for those of you who don't know him, let me ask him directly, who is Jonas Rask?
Oh, so that means me.
That's actually you, yes.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jens. Yes, my name is Jonas Rask, and as you said, I'm an ex-photographer. And I've recently, over the summer, been introduced to or appointed to a position within the Cage Collective, alongside Patrick LaRocque and Kevin Mullins, Bert Stefani, and all those kinds of people. There are seven of us in total. And yes, on the side of that, or maybe I should say my main occupation, is being a doctor. So I have my own practice. I'm a general practitioner. So I have my practice just south of the second largest city in Denmark, called Aarhus. And I have three kids. They're possibly going to disrupt this at some point, but let's see if they just keep out of the room.
Well, we'll see. And kids are always welcome. So I was wondering, between being a photographer and a doctor, how do you balance these kind of things?
Well, I have a patient wife, let me just say that. But more importantly, I try to be very good at just balancing my time and scheduling things and meeting deadlines. If you ask Tomasz, I'm not sure he will agree with me meeting deadlines if you refer to my monthly lens guide in the Fujilove magazine. But yeah, that's another story. I try to keep everything on schedule because that makes it a lot easier. So all comes down to planning, I think.
I see. And when you're actually shooting between commercial work and street photography, how do you balance these two things amongst each other?
Well, in the beginning, I mean, when I started this whole ex-photographer thing, I was mainly just photographing for myself, just going out onto the streets and doing proper street photography. But then everything kind of changed, and I had I felt the urge to start exploring other territories, and then I wanted to explore some commercial stuff, and I started charging for photography. But rather quickly, I find out, I mean, I already made my money from my main occupation, so I didn't have to do that, and so I just kicked that back a bit and then just started doing just pleasure-based photography again, you know, where I didn't have to meet deadlines and requirements of clients and stuff like that. So I was planning on going down that route, but I actually stopped myself from doing it. I think my photography is better from it. So just because I keep it enthusiast based.
Yeah, which is a great thing to do. It's also rather unusual that you can actually transfer from street photography into commercial photography. So that's not something that happens too often in the photography world.
No. I mean, it comes slowly, but I mean, I think it has something to do. I have this natural curiosity that I don't limit myself into genres. I mean, I try to just break that barrier, because I mean, I have a camera in my hand, so there's nothing that should stop me from doing all sorts of photography. So of course there's technical things that I need to learn while doing that. And I think in the end, it makes me a better photographer while doing so.
Totally agree with you. Now, I love to dive into the philosophy of street photography and doing what your heart urges you to do, but actually we're here today to talk about Fuji news and talk about cameras. So before we dive into that, let me know, what was your first Fuji camera actually?
Well, my first was the Fuji X100, the original one. I had the Canon EOS 5D, and it was all right. But there was just something that really just got to me with that X100, and yeah, never looked back since.
Well, we've come quite a long way since the first X100.
Indeed. But still, to this day, I mean, the newest iteration, the X100F, it's, if I get asked this question a lot via email or via personal conversations, so what is your personal favorite Fujifilm camera? And there's no doubt in my mind whenever anyone asks me that, and that's the X100 series. So the latest iteration with the X100F, it's still to me the best camera that Fujifilm has ever made.
So that's also your first Fuji that you grab when you leave the house?
Yeah, it is. When I'm in this position now, and now I seem like a whiny baby, which I shouldn't, because I have a very privileged life, because I'm now in a position where Fujifilm sends me all this stuff, mostly because 2 years ago, or was it 1.5 years ago, they decided to use my images of their products for the entire web refresh on FujifilmX.com. And since then, whenever they have a new model coming out, they send obviously the products to me for photography. And then of course I have it in my hands, so when I take it out and test it. And I've been fortunate enough to be coupled onto a couple of projects. The GFX, I took it to Iceland to test the 23mm. And and this summer I was again granted a test of the XE3, shooting images for the brochure. So I have a lot of gear coming in and out. And that means that I don't always have the time to just grab my favorite camera, because I need to test out the other cameras. It's kind of a luxury problem. So, yeah.
It kind of is. So you had the XE3 since July this year, right?
Yeah, I had.
So when I read your blog, you called it the Liberator. Can you elaborate why you gave it that name?
Yeah, sure. I think it's because it was so small. It is so small, and it is so portable, and it's so liberating to use it coming from the GFX. I mean, I've been using the GFX a lot this year, and I kind of miss what originally got me into the Fujifilm cameras, the compactness. That's not to say that the GFX isn't compact for what it is, because it is, but it just means that I was kind of missing this lightness of gear, of not having to pack a backpack and doing all that stuff. So when I was going, I brought it to Venice. I just I grabbed the XE3 and then just the small trilogy of the new F2 lenses, the 50 F2, the 35 F2, and the 23 F2. And then just, I actually had them in, I had two lenses in one, in each short pocket, and then I had one on the camera, which was very cool and very liberating. So that's why I kind of named it the Liberator.
So between the X100T currently and the XE3, how do you compare those two against each other?
Well, for one, I'm still very fond of the optical viewfinder that I get using the X-Pro2 or the X100F. Some people have ceased using it, but I still use it as a street camera a lot. So the frame lines, I also use a lot of Leica gear, and the frame lines, the rangefinder method of seeing things happening outside the frame before they enter the frame, I really like using that a lot. Then I just switch it to the EVF to check out exposure and stuff like that. And it's kind of a fluid process. And of course the XE3 doesn't have that, but I know that I'm one of the few that actually still uses the OVF like that. So if you take away that, then the obvious difference between the two is that the XE3 is actually smaller. Not by much, but still noticeably smaller. So if you want a compact that's even lighter and smaller than the X100F, then definitely the XE3 is your best bet. Then you have the possibility of changing lenses, which is also awesome. I mean, you can make it quite large if you want to. I actually mounted, we had a full moon a couple of weeks back, and I actually mounted the 100 to 400 lens with a teleconverter onto that little camera. It looked really weird, but it worked out.
I'd love to see a picture of that, actually. Yeah.
It looked crazy. It looked absolutely monstrous.
And so you're not one of the people who miss actually a tilting screen. So you've always been used to shooting with the EVF or the OVF.
Yeah. I mean, I like the XT series because when I do something more professionally, when I go and shoot concerts and stuff, I really like the XT series, the XT2 and the XT20 for that matter, because of the flip screen and stuff like that. It is actually quite usable, but I mean in daily use for my kind of photography, I don't miss it at all. I really don't.
Okay. Which is, it's kind of the philosophy also of Fujifilm, going with the X-Pro2 and now the XE3, that just this line does not have tilting screens. For me personally, I would have preferred always the X-Pro2 from the form factor, but I cannot miss a tilting screen on my camera. It totally limits me in the way I shoot.
Yeah. So you don't use it either, the tilt screen at all, or...?
No, I use it actually all the time. So
okay,
if it had one, it would be for me a really nice small camera, but I cannot not have it at that point.
No. I mean, the X70, that was all about the tilt screen, but with the X70, I don't feel comfortable shooting without an EVF or something to put my eye to, an EVF or an OVF. So I mean, even though the flip screen and the small form factor of the X70 was great, I mean, I never really got around to using it. I use it sometimes, and I use it for family stuff, but not really. So, the XE3 is it's the next thing to that, but without the tilt screen.
Did you miss, I mean, the other big thing that happened with the XE3 is that the D-pad, the four directional pads are gone. How did that feel for you?
That was actually kind of funny because I got this sent from Tokyo, right? I got a request saying, so Jonas, do you want to do brochure work and we'll send a camera? And Fujifilm uses internal code names, so I didn't know what camera it was. They just sent over a camera, and I unpacked it, and of course it said XE3 on the front. And I mean, I've never used the XE series, just to clarify. I never had the XE1 or the XE2. I know a lot of people started out that way, but But as I said, I started out with the X100. So, but when I unpacked it, the first thing, of course, I noticed was that the D-pad was missing. And the first thought was, so I'm just going to miss four function buttons now, because how am I going to just quickly shift my white balance, or how I shift my film simulations and stuff like that? And I was like, why in the world did they do this? And then I got it the day before we left. So we left to Venice, and then I was away for a week before I actually got a message from Fujifilm with a new firmware update that said now the touch function has gotten better. And I'm like, oh, the touch function. Oh, so there's a touch screen on here. And then I actually used the touch screen. And then I said, well, nice with the touch screen, but what about I'm missing a lot of buttons? And they wrote me back, oh, try swiping up, down, and to the sides. And I was like, holy shit, that was so awesome. And I got used to that really quickly. I mean, if you have the camera to your eye, a lot of people want the tactile feedback of a button. But when you have the camera to your eye and you quickly want to go into a menu, you still waste some milliseconds just putting your thumb and actually having your brain decide, are you on the button pointing up, down, or left or right? But with the swipe thing, you can actually use the touchscreen while it's in proximity to your eye. With the touchscreen, you just swipe in the direction you want to, right? You have already made up your mind. You need to swipe left to go left. You don't have to fiddle with finding a button, and that actually makes it really, really fast. And I had not expected this, because I was all over the Hasselblad. What's it called? XED with only the touchscreen control. And I was like, yeah, wait until wintertime in the Nordics. It's going to be hell using a touchscreen. But this implementation on the Fuji is so clever. And I actually started doing it on my X-Pro 2 when I have it to my eye, which is weird.
Yeah, which is interesting, because the feedback is kind of mixed when you read online how people perceive this new improvement. Some say they can't use it because they touch things with their nose and they can't access the screen because they have it up to your eye. Probably depends also if you're a left or a right eye shooter.
Yeah, exactly.
But according to your experience, this is good, or you can.
This is a good thing. Okay. To me, it's a good thing. For my shooting style, it's a good thing. It's so weird, because I'm neither a right eye or a left eye. I can actually use both. To me, it's not a problem. But I can definitely see if you're a left-eyed shooter, then it's going to be a problem, because you'll have your nose into that touchscreen.
I read that you can move the controls of the touchscreen according to where your face is on the camera. Like you can put it left, right, up, down. So that gives a little bit of adjustability.
Yeah, and it actually works okay. I mean, then your area of interaction is smaller. So you need to be more precise, since you only have the left side of the touchscreen or the right side of the touchscreen available. I found no issue just using the entire screen, so I haven't tested that out much.
But the good thing is also with new Fujifilm camera releases, we don't have to talk about image quality, since we always have the same kind of quality sensor in most cameras. But still, the question to me is, between the X100F, the XT20, for who is the XC3? Like, who is the target group for this camera?
Well, judging from the brochure and from what Fujifilm is doing with the marketing of this camera, also combined with the new wireless functions, they're really trying to push this to the younger crowd, to the lifestyle, the bloggers, the people that actually want to have a great camera, but want instant access to the social media and stuff. Okay, so it's not just for the pros, I think. I don't think there are that many pros that will actually. Now I'm saying pros, but I'm not even a pro myself. So, but you, I think most people know what I mean.
Absolutely. Which is, it's a good point you mentioned, because I was super interested in this new Bluetooth function that they implemented, because the old Wi-Fi system used to be quirky at times. Sometimes it worked just fine. Sometimes there were some issues. So how did you experience that?
Well, I mean, the app isn't out yet, and it's in a closed beta. So I played with it on one of the Fujifilm Nordic reps' phone, and just did the stuff with pairing it to my phone and or to his phone, and I mean, it works really, really well. What it does is it actually it connects to your Bluetooth module in your smartphone or wherever. And then it has this always on connection going on, a low power connection, so you'll have no power drain in the camera. And then when you start shooting, it will, you can have a choice of having it transfer everything that you shoot, or just for you to just pick whatever you want to transfer. If it's set to automatic transfer mode, then whenever you enter playback mode or whenever you turn off your camera, then it'll start transferring images to your phone. And it does that, then it through Wi-Fi, or I'm not really sure of that, because I'm thinking that it uses the Bluetooth connection as an always on and as a ping function, and then it uses the Wi-Fi function to transfer the images. So I'm not really sure about that. But then you can also just choose to have the camera set to that you just choose what you want to transfer.
Okay, so you have to have on both Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, or is it?
No, because I mean, I don't know with the camera stuff. When I transferred, I didn't notice anything. I just noticed that it just said that it's transferring images. But I heard some reports that it's using the Wi-Fi. So I don't know about that. I really don't. I haven't checked that out into more detail.
We'll find out. Do you have any idea when the new application will be released?
No, probably around the same time that the XE3 becomes generally available. I don't know, when was that, in October of some sorts?
I think
it was. Yeah.
Well, also, which is a good thing, which I read, is this is the first Fujifilm actually not produced in Japan. So it comes out of China, which is, I heard, due to having a better grip on supplies worldwide.
Yeah.
As we used to wait sometimes for quite a while since Fuji cameras became widely available. So this is the first Fuji not saying made in Japan.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a couple of lenses that have been made outside Japan as well. I mean, to me, as a purist, I mean, I like that my Leica says made in Germany and not made in Canada. And they now have a factory in Portugal as well. And the same thing with Fuji. I like that it says made in Japan, because it has something to do with a high quality standard. But I mean, this is a globalized world, and there's not that much of a difference anymore. I mean, as long as there's a lot of quality control, then I don't really think it matters that much where the stuff gets produced, to be honest.
No, I totally agree. I think it's more of a romantic thing, as you said, that it really looks nice and it gives you a good feel.
Yeah, exactly.
I personally, since I'm a purist as well, I like that they kept the soft release thread on the XE3.
Yeah.
A beautiful little thing, so you can kind of customize it to yourself and add a little touch to it.
Exactly.
And now it's time for a word from our sponsor. No one becomes a Fuji photographer because they love sitting at a desk all day. That's why we are always looking for ways to speed up our post-processing. Combining intelligent technology and traditional darkroom techniques, Landscape Pro makes editing your images fast and easy. Spend less time editing and more time making amazing images. This month, Fujilove podcast listeners can save 10% on any purchase using the coupon FLPODCAST at landscapepro.pix. That's FLPODCAST to save 10% on any purchase.
Speaking of software, have you been able to test the X-RAW Studio software?
No, not yet. I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, it's on paper, it sounds like a really great idea. I mean, I've written to Fujifilm a lot of times with suggestions for how to improve their in-camera RAW converter, because I really use that a lot, actually. I always shoot RAW plus JPEG, and then I know that I can always change my mind and do different stuffs in the camera. And that's actually because, I mean, I've switched to Capture One for a lot of reasons. I still use Lightroom for GFX files and sometimes for convenience. But simply because I think they render the Fujifilms, the Fujifilm files better, but there's none of the converters externally that does as well as the one in the camera. They have their own algorithm down, and I mean, if to be able to use that on a big screen, that'll just be really good. So I hope that they give us a lot of options to tweak curves and colors and stuff like that, like a proper RAW converter, just using the processor in the camera. That would be great.
The internal processor. The way this works is as you connect your camera to your machine, and it will just automatically access the camera's processor.
Yeah, that's what I've been told.
Okay, well, it's interesting to look forward to.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I don't know if, I mean, they must have tested it out that the pipeline going through a USB connection is big enough. But yeah, we'll have to see.
Cool. Now let's dive into something else, which is the XF 80mm 2.8 macro, which you called on your blog the sharpest Fuji lens ever.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, I mean, I got these three products, right? I got the XE3, I got that a little early, and then later on in August, I got sent the GF45 and the XF80. And I don't shoot macro. I have no interest in shooting macro. It's only when I'm really bored and feeling uninspired. That's not to diss any of the macro photographers, because I like what they're doing, but it's just not for me. Plus, I don't have the patience to sit around waiting for an animal to land in the right spot. And then some. I've heard about people using hairspray to kind of freeze the moment. And it's just not for me. So I didn't think much of this lens. So when I got it, it was like the first thing I thought was, well, this is big. It's a bit longer than the XF90, which I already think is a tad to the large side. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, aperture of 2.8, it's not really that good for portraits. So it was actually I had no expectations of this lens whatsoever. So, and I was still testing. Of course, I also got the GF45, and I was much more interested in putting that onto my GFX and doing some street work with it, because it's like a 35mm equivalent, right? But when I finally pulled out that XF80, I was on my way to work on my bicycle, and there's this little place. I live near the countryside, and there's this little place where they had some sunflowers set up that you could just buy on the side of the road. And I just took it out, and I saw a lot of bees over there, and I thought, okay, let's just test it out. And then I went in close, and I mean, that second where I just saw that image pop up to the screen, I was like, I was just stunned. I mean, it was just, I have this image that I took of a bee that I know that Fujifilm Nordic is using a lot in their presentation. It's, we talked about it. There's nothing in the XF series that comes close to this. It's so sharp, and the bokeh is so great. And the fact that it does that at a distance of 20 centimeters from the front lens element is just crazy. It's so sharp, and it renders, it's just really, 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 really good.
I really like your example pictures. There's a quick question just from my side. Was that the first bee that you ever photographed, or was it just a coincidence, or did you have
No. I photographed one once with the 1835. On a flower in my garden, but no, not many bees before that one.
Okay, so that was kind of impressive, actually.
Yeah, that was, I kind of nailed that one.
Yeah, you did.
But that kind of convinced me. And then I thought, well, okay, maybe I should try using this for portraits and see what it does. And I thought, okay, I can actually move in a lot closer than I can with the 90mm. So maybe the f/2.8 can still blur the background because, I mean, it's relative to the subject distance. So I shot some portraits of my daughter. And I mean, still, the skin is nice and soft, and it's not. When you use the macro lens on the GFX, the GF120, it's so sharp that it almost renders the skin unusable. Mm-hmm. If you do it for portraiture, you have to have a great retoucher, or else you have to have a model from another world, yeah. Because it's so crisp and clear. That's where the 110mm is a little bit better because it kind of blurs it a little bit. Not as unsharp, but it's sharp in a different way. So I was expecting the 80mm to be so sharp when doing portraits, but the thing is when you go back a little bit and not use the macro part of the lens, then it does that thing that where it gets very usable as a portrait lens, where it's sharp but it's not over sharp. It has great contrast, but actually better than the 90mm. I tend to hold every XF lens up against the 90mm because it's such an optical nice lens. And the only thing where the XF 80mm is worse is actually in the bokeh department. And that's about it. I mean, the 80mm has optical stabilization, which is great for when you have to. You don't have anything wider than the 2.8 aperture, so you can dial down your shutter speed. So that's quite useful. And then.
Besides having a few years between them, how do you compare it to the 60mm 2.4?
I'm actually one of the guys who use the 60 2.4 a lot because I use it for my product photography for Fujifilm. Mm-hmm. But I don't use that with the kids because it it's such a slow focusing device. And I mean, I don't think I would ever have caught that bee using that 60mm. So for macro thing, it's a great performer, the 60mm, but to this, there's no contest whatsoever.
Okay. So if anybody owns the 60mm, it's absolutely worth the upgrade from your point of view.
Oh yes. It's the only thing the 60mm has got for it is the compact size. It's really compact, the 60mm. So that's a good thing. But the autofocus in the 80mm is incredible. It's fast. It's almost as fast as the 50-140. So you can use it for a lot of stuff.
That sounds really good. I used to use the 60mm on the X-Pro 1, actually, on the streets.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I can tell you some stories about slow autofocus. Those two devices combined.
That is crazy.
What I would recommend everybody listening is to go to jonasraskphotography.com, if I remember right, because you have two amazing reviews up on there. General question as we speak about lenses, what are your favorite Fuji lenses in general?
Of all times?
Yes.
That would be the 35mm 1.4.
I totally agree with you. I wish they would do actually a newer version of the same lens with the same specifications.
Same specs, same lens group, same polish, same coating, same everything. Then just put it in an internal focusing mechanism and make it weather sealed, and then they'd have an
amazing,
a timeless
lens.
Classic. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, but I mean the 35 1.4 in my lens guide. I'm doing the trilogy of the old lenses, and I've already written about the 18 and the 60, so the 35 is next. And writing about that lens is so difficult for me because it's the one that I've had for the longest time, and it's by far the one that I've taken most pictures with. And it's not perfectly sharp wide open, and it doesn't have it's not that precise in autofocus, and it's not that fast, and it has that external focusing mechanism, and it's not weather sealed. But when you hit it, with that lens. I can't explain what happens. It's just the image quality that comes out of that is beyond belief. So yeah, and I'm educated within natural science, so I should be able to put this down in numbers, but there's simply something with that lens that I can't put down in numbers.
I think the beautiful thing is that you can sometimes. For me, it's the 56 millimeter has an equal magic to it. So there's a few Fuji lenses that just, you can't explain it, but they're just magical.
Exactly. And the 35 is definitely one of those.
Totally agree with you. So to sum this up a little bit, as we know, Fuji usually brings features and firmware updates to most of the cameras. There's a few things we haven't mentioned, that, for example, the X-Pro2 will get the 4K support, which is also an amazing thing. I'm not a video shooter, but given that Fujifilm told us at the release that this will not work due to restrictions and overheating, it actually really shows how much work they put into optimizing their cameras after the fact they have released them.
Yeah. I think what they did was, because I've heard a lot of this and a lot of accusations saying that, well, it was just marketing bullshit from Fujifilm all along. But the truth of the matter is that there isn't as big a heatsink in the X-Pro2 as there is in the X-T2. But if you look at all other cameras doing 4K from Fujifilm besides the X-T2, they do it in a downscaled way that doesn't put out the exact same quality and bitrate as the X-T2. So they found a way to generate 4K without generating as much heat, and that's why they can put it in an even smaller camera, such as the X-E3 and the X-T20. So now they put it in smaller cameras, and they found a way to do it with the X-Pro2, which, again, as you say, show a lot about their dedication to just listening to what people want and then just going that extra mile to put it in there. I mean, the X-Pro2 came out when? January 2016. It's almost 2 years old.
Yes.
And to add that function 2 years into a product cycle, it's crazy. It's good.
Well, Fujifilm puts a lot of thought behind their model series, and that's one of the things that we all appreciate. Speaking of that, and kind of my last technical question to you, what do you think we'll see within the next year? As we know, Photokina is coming up 2018, and usually there are things happening around this event. What do you think we will see in future Fujifilm cameras of little hints and updates that we've seen up to now?
Well, I mean, I think Fuji is really starting to take this video thing seriously. And if you look at where the thing is heading, I mean, if you look at online magazines, they all use video, and YouTube is growing, and it's all about video content now, more than it was a couple of years ago. So I think that they might be moving in that direction. I mean, now they also released some cinema lenses for use on E-mount and X-mount. So I think personally that they're going to do a lot more in that. And then, of course, with the GFX, they're going to try and develop that. They already said from the beginning that the lenses can resolve more than 100 megapixels. So I wouldn't. I mean, I've seen the roadmaps back from when Sony introduced them, and they have 100 megapixel crop sensor in the pipeline. So why not? I mean, they call it the GFX the 50S. So why not 100S at some point, right? So a lot of I'm thinking that they put a lot of power and development into that. On the XF, looking at what they just announced with a long tele lens and a super wide angle zoom, I think they're just trying to complete the lineup really. So there's a little bit for everyone. With camera tech, I really don't know. I mean, I still hope that they would do a compact version or another version of the X100 that has some of the features of the Leica Q, where you can choose your focal length and maybe have a wider lens on there, so you have an 28 millimeter, but you can crop it to a 35 millimeter, something like that. I wish that they had done that in the X100F. They need to. I think that line, the X-Pro2 line and the X100 line, keep it rangefinder, keep it pure. and then do all the crazy technology stuff on the XT side of things. I think that's what they should do.
Well, I agree with you. For me personally, I'm looking forward to whatever it's going to be called, the XT2S, the XT3, whatever. And I'm with you saying don't change things dramatically. Keep the evolution going.
Yeah, exactly. Put in the new camera tech and put in whenever there's a new sensor out that does better dynamic range and does better stuff. I mean, put that in there and then just go from there.
Do you have any specific, like if you have one wish for Fujifilm, what would it be?
To stay true, to keep on going. They're growing. Right, they're like Fujifilm always reminded me of what Apple was 10 years ago, or maybe even more, when they weren't that big before the iPhone. They were still just pushing the envelope and being true to themselves and not being a huge global market share thing. As much as I like to see Fujifilm grow, I hope that the philosophy and the closeness of the small teams, that it'll persist so that we keep on getting products where people have actually had them in their hands and felt it and going like, well, this isn't good for photography, so we're not going to do that. So the purest kind of thinking, I hope that they just stick to that.
Which is the Fujifilm spirit, and I agree with you. I hope this will stay alive as long as, and hopefully forever, Fujifilm is around.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you very much, Jonas. As I said before, if you go to jonasraskphotography.com, I think we will link to it also in the show notes. You find both reviews of the XF 80mm 2.8 and the XE3. Any last words you want to share with the Fujilove community?
No, just thank you for having me on the podcast again. It's been a couple of years since I was on here last time. That was all about the street photography stuff. So, today it's more technical. But thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Jonas, for joining us. And I'm actually looking forward to talk to you about street photography at another occasion.
Yeah, we need to do that, right? Yes. One street photographer to another.
Absolutely. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Jonas. Have a great day, and we'll talk to each other soon.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Fuji Love Podcast. Stay up to date with Fuji Love. Follow our Facebook page and join the Fuji Love Facebook Readers Group. Head over to www.fujilove.com for all the necessary information. Take good care, and we will talk to you next time.